internet. How's it going today? How you doing? I'm Billy Bones, and this is a walk through the mind, a moment where we can sit down, hang out, chit-chat, discuss a handful of ideas that have been bouncing around inside my head, and see if we can't go out there, get the conversation started, or maybe even just see if we can get those gears turning within our own head, see what rabbit holes that takes us down, see what we're able to explore and discover on our own time. Now back on June 21st, 2020, big controversy unfolded here in the United States of America, down at Talladega Speedway in Alabama. A NASCAR driver named Bubba Wallace, who had been pushing for the removal of the Confederate battle flag from the NASCAR sport, one of his team members found a noose in their garage. Now, this stirred up quite a bit of controversy, seeing as Bubba is a black individual. And with the connotation that this flag represents white supremacy, and then you have a noose, almost looks like someone's coming after him for being black and going against the grain of what other people believe. And NASCAR, rightfully so, came out rather quick and said, we're not going to stand for this. We're not a racist organization. We're going to go ahead and remove the flag, and we're going to investigate this noose. Well, lo and behold, the noose turned out to have been there since October the previous year, 2019. 9 months that noose had been there. An elaborate garage pull, just something to shut the door. Wasn't necessarily meant as far as we understand currently, as a derogatory means, something to say that, you know, we don't like your kind here kind of situation. Just someone decided to tie that knot, again, to close the garage door. And this created all sorts of controversy and backlash. And if you ask me, I'm going to throw the blame on Jussie Smollett for that situation. The boy who cried wolf. Jussie tied a noose around his neck, splashed bleach in his eyes, filed police reports saying that Trump supporters did this to him. And through the process of the investigation, it turned out that no, Jussie had planned this out and filed a false police report. He had done all the damage to himself by himself in order to push a political message. And so when we see this situation unfold as quick as it did, through the means that it did, of NASCAR putting out a statement rather quick, and then a day or two later, it turns out that no, it wasn't put there as a derogatory means. It was just there because someone chose to do it that way 9 months beforehand. So we have a lot of people calling hoax and fake news and this and that, and making fun of Bubba Wallace for this situation. And again, it is that boy who cried wolf. We had this one person playing it up for months on end, how this was terrible. We had the news supporting Jussie Smollett, supporting how this was just terrible. And then when it finally comes out that it was not as big of a deal, they kind of just kind of slowly walk it back and kind of sweep it under the rug like it really, all the previous events never really happened. So when we have, again, that serious situation that seems to appear under controversial times, again, that attempt to remove that flag, it backfires, more or less. The flag has still been removed from NASCAR because so many people view it as a means of white supremacy. But is that really what the flag means? When you start digging into it, there's a lot of people that feel that that battle flag stands for states' rights. And we can say, yeah, they wanted the states' rights to own slaves, and that's definitely a part of the equation. But at the same time, you had the population of the South, very sparsely populated, a lot of farms, and fine, slaves only counted for 1/3 of a human towards the population. So that, again, didn't increase the number by a whole lot, seeing that there were a whole bunch of slaves, but cut that number down to 1/3. And that's your representation in Congress, the House of Representatives. Whereas in the North, you had a lot more densely populated cities. You had factory workers. And so the House of Representatives was more densely populated that way. And the South started feeling like the federal government was pushing an excessive number of tariffs onto the states. And these southern states did not appreciate that. They felt like their voice wasn't heard equally within the Senate. Or not the Senate. the House of the Congress. And so as the expansion of states moved westward, obtaining that manifest destiny, and the kibosh was put on more slave-available states, that kind of kicked it off, and states started seceding. Now, when you look at the population of the South back in those days, the people that held slaves was about 3% of the population. Now, part of that population, I'm sure, that kind of gets underwritten is the black population. But still, only 3% of the people in the South held slaves. And that's not to say that the North didn't own slaves. Plenty of slaves in the North, maybe not so much at the time of the Civil War, but they still had slaves. So it wasn't completely, the Civil War wasn't completely built around slavery. And we have, again, this flag, this centerpiece of the topic, this Confederate battle flag. Reading accounts of the ancestors, or the descendants, I should say, of these Civil War fighters, you look at it as these people were proud to work the land, the farms that they were a part of. And even though they didn't agree necessarily with the political motives of the secession of the states, you still had an army that was coming down. And if you were on that side of the border, well, obviously you must be a part of them regardless. And they will step in, take and ruin your farm, destroy your family heritage that you've built up over the years, over the generations that you've just lived there as yourself, minding your own business, raising your own family. And so you had to stand together. You know, you don't want, again, those people coming in and ruining your way of life just because some guy who's representing you decided to ruin it all for everybody. And there were many different flags throughout the South, throughout the Confederacy. And you can see all that. There's one or two that became the actual representation of the Confederacy. But the one that we call the Confederate flag was actually just a battle flag. The one that everybody agreed to fight under, the banner that represented their side, their strength of support, of protecting their brothers and sisters, standing on the front line. As we bring it into today, and we ask what it represents now, again, we see that on a grander scale, people see this as a sign of the white supremacy, the means to subjugate blacks. Is that what everybody feels that it means? Can people have their own personal identification of this flag, knowing that their ancestors stood, fought, and died for what they believe in, standing up for the right to govern themselves? At what point does the flag take on a different meaning necessarily than what it originally stood for, that battle flag? Or even so much so far as to completely evolve into something new? An easy enough comparison, I might say, and maybe it is going too far, but we can look at the Muslim religion and how we view it here in the United States of America. 9/11 was perpetrated by people of the Muslim faith, as we're told. We're told that people of the Muslim faith are out there to kill and destroy everybody. They think white Americans are worthless and don't deserve to live. But yet when we can go out and talk and interact with the Muslims that actually do exist here within the borders of the United States, we can find that they are very polite, very loving, very caring. And they despise those people that abuse the way they view the Quran and their faith. They don't feel that everyone should die. They're able to intermingle within society peacefully enough. And they can have their views behind closed doors, but it doesn't mean that they still want everybody to who's not Muslim to perish. At what point can that flag sit there and now stand for the freedom of speech? The whole purpose of sitting there going, you're not going to erase my history. You're not going to silence my thoughts. One individual can see the flag as a white supremacist symbol and the other person can interpret that symbol to mean something completely different. We can look at the removal of these statues, these Confederate statues, and even so much as the non-Confederate statues, which I think that just falls under mob rule. We're destroying one, let's destroy them all. But this erasure of history, those who forget history are bound to repeat it. Now, maybe it is for good measure. I've heard plenty of stories of individuals who walk by these statues and they feel the presence of this individual, this Confederate slaveholder, standing and lording over them. And they feel that that person has stood, is standing there saying, "You're my property. What are you doing walking around?" But what about the people who are able to go out, stand at the foot of those statues, spit at their feet and go, "You don't own me. Your ideology didn't win. Your belief that slaves are property didn't follow through. And while you may stand there cast in metal, you have no power over me, no sway." At what point can we take these statues as a means of learning? We could put up little placards on the statues saying, while the views are outdated of this individual, he did own slaves, and this should be a reason to be shown that you don't want slaves. I've heard an argument in the process of removing the statues. You just leave the empty plinth as a means to show the advancement in our way of thinking, that we saw these statues as a means of remembrance, endearment towards those who had fallen in the Confederate Army, and we remove them and put them elsewhere, not destroy them, but we leave that plinth saying we have evolved. I believe there's an argument for that as well. But what about the fact that these statues weren't put up by the government? The government did not install these. These were privately funded statues, means of remembrance. The Daughters of the Confederacy raised their own money, were able to acquire the land to install these statues so that they could remember their heritage. Again, they're proud. They can have their view, but that doesn't mean that they all support slavery. They can support their family that stood up again for what they believed in, fought what they thought was an oppressive government. We can have the conversation about these statues and the Confederate battle flag being on government property, publicly sanctioned areas, just like we can have the conversation about the Ten Commandments being on public government property. Don't believe that those should be there, but if you have private property, by all means, post it. We have the freedom of speech, but freedom of speech is not a freedom from reaction. We should all understand that when we post something, stand for something, announce something, we have every right to do it. But if someone feels negatively, they have a right to voice their opinion opposite. They do not have the right to inflict harm or damage on personal property or personal self. And we seem to have forgotten that in this day and age. At some point in time, we have conflicted or confused words, hateful words, hateful feelings into or as physical feeling. We believe that these words cause such physical damage that we must go out and retaliate equally. And in this time of social media, where everything is written or created to create that dopamine rush, everything is meant to give you a reaction, positive or negative. And again, we find those feelings to interact with us supposedly physically. And so we take these feelings and lash out accordingly. And so when we lash out and we take away someone else's symbol, their belief, be it free speech or the belief of white supremacy, and they now feel that they've been wronged by your free speech and your motivation, at what level do they react because their feelings now equate to physical harm? We turn this into an eye for an eye situation. And with that, the whole world goes blind. So how do we fix this? How do we advance this conversation? I'm not too entirely sure, but I believe that we can. We are strong-willed enough. We are smart enough. I feel that we need to be a little bit more caring, a little bit more open-minded. We need to remember that words do not cause physical harm, as bad as it may make us feel. But sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Again, that's just, you know, talking points, gears turning, seeing where it takes us, seeing where we can apply these ideas and conversations, advance our own way of thinking, or maybe you just want to say, "Hey, Billy, You're a moron. You don't know what you're talking about. Maybe that's so. But if that's so, you get in contact with me at Billy Bones, B-I-L-L-Y-B-O-N, the number 3-S, on Twitter. You send me a tweet. You let me know that I'm too short-sighted in my ways of thinking. Or maybe I got something right and deserve some little diatribe. You reach me on email, billybones@mail.com, not Gmail. Or you can go to the website, billybones.com, which has that email link. You can also get that link to the Discord server and send that full diatribe, positive or negative, and you let me know. And this is a value for value podcast. If you found any value out of this, I first ask that you give it a share. Hopefully, again, we can get that conversation started. The gears turning within the global collection of us all. But if you found monetary value out of it, you go to that website, billybones.com. That's the number 3 instead of an E. You scroll all the way down. You click that value for value button. It'll take you to PayPal. You're willing to donate whatever you felt this episode or any of the previous episodes are worth. But until next time, I love you guys, and I'll talk to you then.